show ever on 97.5 The Fanatic.
It's 2 o'clock in Philadelphia and time for the best show ever. Now, your starting lineup. Bring in the heat. Ricky. Botalico. Hunter. Rhodey. Jen. Gordo. And finally, your host, The Fanatic, Philadelphia.
Good afternoon, everybody. Good afternoon. Oh, it's like the best day ever here on the best show ever here on 97.5 The Fanatic at NBC Sports Philadelphia. 610-632-0975 is the number to participate. Let's get right to the opening statements. Start with the word of the day. And the word of the day today is danger. Danger. We find out that the injury to C.J. Gardner-Johnson was a lacerated kidney. Now, we thought it might be a rib injury, and there may be a rib injury in addition to that. But we find out it's a lacerated kidney. And that's when I hear things like that, that aren't an ankle sprain or a finger or things like that, high ankle sprain, that kind of stuff, it reminds me personally of the danger of football and really all sports because they all have certain amount of inherent danger, but it reminds me just the danger of football. And this is larger than just the team itself because overall, the Eagles actually have had pretty good injury luck, if you look at the whole thing. By and large, relative to NFL football, they've been pretty lucky injury-wise. They're happening now, but how many of those guys, if any of them, are out for the year? How many guys have they had, period, that are out for the year? Overall, the Eagles have actually been lucky, despite the fact that they do have numerous injuries right now. But when a guy gets hurt like that, lacerated kidney, out there just playing the game, no dirty play or anything like that, it just reminds me of the danger of the game, and I have to make an admission. And I'm, by the way, right at the top, I'm admitting that I could be a weirdo. I am not saying that necessarily my opinion here is mainstream, but I want to find everybody else's opinion and see if I'm a weirdo or not, really. Back in the day watching football, let's say like the 90s or the 2000s, the bigger the hit, the happier I was watching football. And I didn't think about any consequences of those hits, to be completely honest. I remember playing, and I don't mean I didn't play in the NFL, but I remember the mentality of playing is, if you could get up, you were good. You got the bell rung as far as concussions go, and you would just play, and that was just that. And then as I've gotten older, and I've learned more about concussions and all different kind of things, the danger of the game is on my mind when I'm watching the game. When I see the big hit, I'm still entertained. But it hits me different than it used to. And I recognize I may be an outlier. But the hits that I used to think were great, I now cringe. I'm not a big Aaron Rodgers fan. I don't think anybody really is. But when I hear he thought he had a collapsed lung, I'm like, whoa. Because at the end of the day, sports, and we love sports, we wouldn't do this if we didn't love sports, is an entertainment product. We could be watching anything, and we choose to watch sports. We can watch a sitcom, we can watch a movie, we can watch a drama, we can watch reality TV. We could be watching anything, and we choose to watch sports. And we love sports. But the danger of the game, I can't help but be reminded of it when something like this happens. Only because when I'm watching the sport, I don't ever want anybody to be hurt seriously for my entertainment. I never want anyone to be hurt seriously for our entertainment. And at the end of the day, that's what sports are. And I want to know from people, when you're actively watching a football game, hockey game, those two sports in particular, Or is the danger of the game on your mind? Or are you just able to watch the game completely free and calm? Because I tell you, for the last several years, I have not been able to watch pro football, especially. Hockey's different because the Flyers haven't been good. So it's almost like I haven't been as invested in the sport the way I should, because I feel like in some ways they've taken the sport away from me, where I want to be involved and into it, and they've taken it away from me. While the Eagles have done their part, making the playoffs last year, being the best team in football this year, to keep me engaged. So it's on my mind that every big hit, like if when Hurts goes down and gets hit, I'm not just thinking about, oh, I hope Jalen Hurts gets up for my team. I'm hoping Jalen Hurts gets up for Jalen Hurts. And the danger is on my mind when I watch it. And I hate that a guy has a lacerated kidney. Hunter, am I a weirdo? Do you think of the danger of the game when you're watching the game?
I think of the danger, absolutely. I think maybe you take it a little bit farther than I do, which I thought about it a lot. But, you know, for example, when Jalen Hurts takes a hit or something, I do, and this is me admitting it right now, and I'm kind of just thinking about it as you give your opening monologue, I do think of him getting back up after he slides for the football team. So I do think of it in the long term, specifically offensive linemen. I'm always concerned of the long term of a Lane Johnson, of a Trey Thomas, of a Jason Kelsey. Because we see these stories about how these linemen over the years, and it's not just linemen, but I'm using that as the example. There are times where I think of it selfishly as the team, and then there are times where I think of the player. So I think I'm somewhere in between the people who still just want to see the crazy hits and the obnoxious level of intensity, and then where you stand. There's times when I'm watching on Sunday when there's a game where it's just it's Sunday Night Football, it's the only game on, everyone's focusing on it, and then you see the crowd and they pan to the crowd and these people with the shoulder pads on, the face paints, and they're screaming at the top of their lungs. And I'm going like, this doesn't even feel like a football game. It's almost like medieval times where there's just craziness going on and people have their pitchforks and going nuts. And I'm like, this is a football game. Like, it almost puts it back in perspective on how crazy we are for these two people to go toe-to-toe, head-to-head, and see who could win the battle. It's pretty bizarre, but, you know, being a hockey guy, I think of R.J. Umberger, who took that hit right inside the blue line, and he couldn't get up, and it looked like, you know, bad things were really happening. Yeah. Paul Kariya, Scott Stevens. As I'm getting older, I'm realizing that the athletes themselves are changing that way, because now that they're more of my generation, these kids are 20, 21 years old. Well, they grew up differently playing the sport when they're 14, 15, 16. So that impacts the professionals at this point. But I think I'm somewhere in between the old school and you, where it crosses my mind, but in doses. And I think you might be in the spot, maybe I'm reading it wrong, where it's maybe 90% of the time, if not more.
Yeah, it is. What about you, Ricky?
I got to tell you, growing up, this is a perfect example. When I was playing, you know, football when I was a little kid, we could spear each other. That's how bad it was. I mean, we would go helmet to helmet. There were no penalties back then. That's what I grew up with. I grew up watching Lawrence Taylor try to take off quarterbacks' helmets. And then I think what changed it for me was the Joe Theismann. When Joe Theismann broke his leg when Lawrence Taylor hit him, that was gross to me. And at some point in your life, you start to say to yourself, wow, that's just a little bit too much. I look at this Gardner Johnson hit the other day. It looked like a very normal hit. It looked like a shoulder hit into the receiver, and you didn't think anything of it until he kind of freezes afterwards. And I love the big hits. I'm kind of with you. I don't think that's a minority. I think people love the big hits, but they don't want to see the injuries go along with it. I think that's fair enough. I think the NFL has done a lot with the helmets and with the equipment, trying to take away those long-term injuries that we've heard of, the CTEs and the head problems and concussions and everything else. But there's still concussions being doled out day in, day out. And it is a scary game. I mean, you look at it anywhere, any sport, besides baseball. Baseball is really non-contact, with the exception of getting hit by the baseball, but I don't think anybody really wishes that on anybody. But obviously, if you are a fan of football, you want your team to hit the other team. It's a bottom line. That's the way the game is played. It's a violent sport. Do I feel bad about rooting for big hits? I don't. I'm sorry. I enjoy hard-hitting football. I enjoy, when they're not necessarily quote unquote going after somebody, but when you get to the quarterback, I used to love the blindsided hit on the quarterback. I mean, you don't see a lot of those. I mean, you're laughing over there, Hunter, but I'm not kidding you. You used to root for that. Now you don't necessarily root for that as much. So I would say I've softened in time because of the injuries that I have seen, both on the field and you see what happens to guys later on. I mean, who was it in the Super Bowl for the Raiders back when he disappeared?
Oh, yeah, the lineman, yeah, I forget center. His name. Yeah, yeah.
Disappeared, didn't even show up for the Super Bowl. Yeah. I mean,
turns out he had tough mental issues from concussions.
And I think that's something that kind of brings you back down to reality. So, I mean, I was also one of those guys that would watch NASCAR for the crashes.
Oh, I never did that.
Well,
I don't even watch NASCAR.
I watched NASCAR for the races back in the day.
I like NASCAR.
Dale Earnhardt.
Joey Logano, man. It's my boy.
Yeah, young guy. He's been a champion. 610-632-0975. We'll get to Joel Embiid and the danger of throwing dirt on a superstar player after three games. We'll talk to Rich Hoffman later on. We'll talk to Jeff Mosher. But 610-632-0975. I want to know from people. When you hear about an injury like a lacerated kidney, the unusual type of injuries, the injuries you don't see every day, does that make you think about the danger of the game? Or do you just watch football? And I'm not really judging because I'm admitting I may be a weirdo. And also, just in general, when you watch pro football, college football, any sport, are you thinking about the danger of the game? Or are you detached and just trying to be entertained? I truly want to know because I just can't imagine what it must be like to go out there. I know they get paid handsomely. And they're just watching Sunday Night Football. And now a guy's kidney is cut. What the heck is going on here? Like, that's what lacerated means. I don't know. There's a cut in the man's kidney. That makes me feel a certain kind of way. Like, well, like, is this why we're watching the game? Like, something about it just doesn't sit right with me. I know I may not be normal. That's why I want to talk to everybody else about it. 610-632-0975. We'll get to the Sixers in just a little while as well, as they won their four out of the last five games. They had five games in seven nights. They win four of those. And we'll update you about Team USA versus Iran. And we'll be back here on 97.5 The Fanatic and NBC Sports Philadelphia.
The best show ever on 97.5 The Fanatic.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.
97.5 The Fanatic.
Nice. 7-5 The Fanatic, NBC Sports Philadelphia, best show ever, 610-632-0975. Long segment coming up, so we'll have your phone calls in just a moment after we talk to this gentleman who joins us quite often. He writes, covers the Sixers for The Athletic, does a fantastic job, Mr. Rich Hoffman on the Comcast Business Hotline. How are you today, Rich?
Ty, I'm doing well. How are you?
Good, man. And as you're doing well, the Sixers have been doing well. They just played five games in seven nights. They win four of them, and it's capped off by the return of Joel Embiid, and he was excellent last night. Rich, early in the year, obviously had a slow start, but now he's back to being one of the best players in the game. You've lived in this city your whole life. You've covered this team. You also see what's said about Embiid. Why do you think some people kind of forget, if he has a slow start, that he's still one of the best players in the world? And usually around the month of December, that's when that really kicks in.
I think it's probably because when he struggles, it's very apparent. You know, like when he's made the point that when he struggles, people always point to, oh, he's out of shape. And sometimes he says, that's not actually the case. You know, I'm a big guy who, you know, I think it's probably a little bit easier to see when I'm messing up and I'm not playing at this high level. That's not always the case. So I think it's just a case of it's very apparent when he screws up. But yeah, I would say over the past couple of weeks, obviously he just missed a full week due to the foot injury he suffered, last weekend. But, I thought he was excellent in last night's game. And I thought the other thing that's, I think it's pretty underrated about Joel is that I think he saw how well the Sixers backups were playing. Like, you know, he saw them score 133 points in Orlando, and he approached most of that game as like, look, I'm not going to score 59 points tonight. I don't need to do that. I want to get Shake Milton and De'Anthony Melton and Tobias Harris involved. And even when the Sixers struggled shooting for most of that game, he stuck to that script. And then at the very, very end, he won that game for him. So I just think his intellect, his basketball IQ is a very underrated thing. And, you saw that on display last night.
Speaking of Shake Milton, he had 21 last night and he's been playing great. What have you seen in his game that you like this so far this season? And do you think it's sustainable?
I think the issue, and Joel said this after the game, like they were like, have you seen anything different from Shake? And I agree with him when he said, no, the NBA is a lot about opportunity where, these guys who are 11th, 12th men, a lot of time, if you just put the ball in their hands, they are capable of, playing winning basketball, of scoring, 24, 25 points per game and six assists, whatever Shake's numbers have been over the past seven games. I do think Shake he's an outlier case in that he is somebody who needs to play regularly and he needs the ball. And it's a little bit of a tough situation when everybody is available. And when James Harden and Tyrese Maxey are on this team, he's more of a spot up shooter and he does not get the ball all that much. That is not the best use of his skill set. Like Shake is pretty good at running pick and roll. He's got these super long arms that he can throw these kind of crazy angle bounce passes. Joel has said it too, that he likes when Shake plays because he thinks most players can't throw on the pocket passes he likes in the pick and roll. And Shake is very adept at that. So he's another really smart player. So I would say that it's been opportunity, but it's also been that he is not great as just a 3-and-D specific player. He needs to touch the ball. He needs to run pick and rolls. And when you give him that opportunity, he's better than somebody who normally doesn't play, I would say. Like most 11th, 10th men, they are not capable of kind of carrying the offense like Shake has done at times over the past week, but he is. It's one of those weird things.
I'm just curious because we talk a lot about, the team's got to play together to get, to gel together. I mean, when Harden and Maxey come back, how long is that going to be that team now gels together? Because it seems like these guys who have taken over have kind of gelled themselves.
No, Ricky, that's a great question. I mean, I think it's the biggest thing on Doc's mind right now. He said it even before last night's game. It was, man, we got Shake, we got Melton, we got Firk, all of these guys who really, I mean, Melt was playing, but the other guys were barely in the rotation. They gelled. I mean, the level of chemistry that they showed over the past week was excellent. And they really, I think Tobias is kind of the fulcrum, figured out a way to win these games and move the ball. That's my biggest question moving forward is like, when you have James Harden back, when you have Tyrese Maxey back, can they play this same style of basketball? Because at the beginning of the season, they weren't playing that well. And there is a balance here where, those top three players, Embiid, Harden, and Maxey, they need to be allowed to cook. They need to be allowed to have, like, freedom. And there's a reason they get paid, max-level contracts. And in Maxey's case, he will be paid a max-level contract when his rookie deal is up. But these other guys are more capable than, it was shown at the beginning of the year, The Sixers bench scoring over the first week and a half, it was like the lowest in years. And then you see these same group of players rattle off a 3-1 week without any of these guys. So I think that is the biggest question moving forward. And I don't know exactly how it's going to work. I mean, James Harden is a very specific, idiosyncratic player, and I will be interested to see how that happens. But the good news, I think, is that the super duper star on the team, Joel Embiid, he seemed very attuned to that idea. And he was looking to pass the ball. I think he finished with 7 assists in last night's game. He would have had more if they shot the ball well. But that is kind of the biggest issue with this team because they're guarding at a very high level right now. The offense, which is the bigger issue.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about that. We're talking to Rich Hoffman, covers the Sixers for The Athletic, about that defense and Melton, because we already talked about Shake. Melton didn't shoot the ball last night very well, but can cover a lot of positions. And I know a lot of people are wondering just how good he is. And lately, with obviously the top guards out, he's been playing a ton. Man, what a great trade, in my opinion, to get him. how important will he be, has he been, and will he be for the perimeter defense on this team? Because we know that's not something that neither Harden nor Maxey really specialize in.
I think he's going to be crucial moving forward, and he has exceeded my expectations. I had pretty high expectations for him. I watched him a decent amount in Memphis, playing next to Ja Morant and really thriving in that situation as Memphis ascended from, you know, a lottery team to, I think they were the number two seed last year. I thought he was really good. He's even exceeded what I thought he was going to give to the Sixers. His, like his nickname in Memphis was Mr. Do Something, just because he, you know, whether it's a steal, a rebound, a block, whatever it is, a dunk, he is able to, you know, give the Sixers an element that they didn't have, you know, that athleticism, that just spontaneous playmaking. And, I just think watching him play defense has been a lot of fun over the past week because he gets steals. You know, Thybul, he gets steals in, you know, kind of the sneak attack ways. Melton can steal the ball in any specific way. I mean, honestly, they would have won the game against Minnesota if he would have made that layup at the end of the game. Like, they didn't play that well. But the steal was unbelievable. He picked Anthony Edwards clean in a key spot at the end of the game. And I don't think that should go unnoticed is my point. So, I think as far as like toughness, defense, 3-point shooting, like as we saw in last night's game, there are going to be nights when he's just not shooting it well from the 3-point line. There are going to be nights when his touch on layups and floaters are not there. But I think the Sixers have to be really happy because like you said, they traded Danny Green and a late first-round pick, so a guy who was injured and something that was not going to help them this year, even if that late first-round pick hit, like that wasn't going to be a helpful part of the rotation. They have to be very happy with the early returns on that trade.
The last time we spoke weeks ago, I brought up P.J. Tucker's offense, and it has continued to struggle. We know what he brings defensively, but what are your thoughts on where he is? I know he's been, sore with an ankle as well?
Yes, he has been banged up. I mean, that's the other thing that's been impressive about this guy. Like, Tobias Harris is dealing with a lot of injury issues, and P.J. Tucker is dealing with that nagging ankle injury. So you basically have all five starters who have been hurt this entire time. So it's been impressive. As far as his offense, he is completely lost, guys. Like, I think there was a possession in last night's game where he tried to throw an entry pass to Joel Embiid. It was not a hard entry pass. Like, and he missed, you know, a 10-foot bounce pass by 7-8 feet, and the ball went out of bounds, and Embiid tried to save it. So he is completely lost on offense right now. And I think that is a little bit of an issue to look for moving forward. As I have said in the past, I do think he will be a little bit better with James Harden setting him up. He's a more limited offensive player. That has been an issue. Now that said, like, his defense has been really good over the past couple of weeks. And that wasn't as much the case earlier in the season. Like, you know, you had a guy who forced Kevin Durant to just, like, Kevin Durant had 21 points against them. Giannis Antetokounmpo had 24 points against them, and it was not an efficient game, and, you know, he got in a fight with the ladder afterwards, too. Like, part of that is P.J. Tucker was leaning on him the entire game. So I think it's a little bit of a long-term issue. Like, you need to get him back. Like, 0 points in, I think 5 of his last 6 games, that is not acceptable. But overall, the fact that you're winning and the fact that he's contributing in this way is, I think it's okay right now. I would put it that way.
All right, I got to ask you, the Sixers have had a nice week, obviously. If they had a poor week, we'd be throwing it all on Doc Rivers. How much of this good week is thrown at Doc Rivers now?
Well, thank you for asking that question, because that is the thing that bothers me more than anything about basketball coverage now. Like, he coaches the games that they win, too. Like, I think we do need to make that point. I do think it's fair to point out that over the past 3 years, it's been the same case. Doc Rivers, when the Sixers are shorthanded, almost comically shorthanded as they've been, that's when he does his best work. Like, I feel like he should sub in for some of these NCAA tournament teams, these 15 and 14 seeds in the first round, because he would do well when they have less talent. I don't know. For some reason, he gets the group organized when they are not at their best. And look, some of this is on him. Like, he needs to do a better job when Harden and Embiid are here, but I think he deserves a decent amount of credit, at least the same amount of credit as the blame he was getting earlier in the season. And, you know, I the thing I look for with Doc is, like, is the group playing hard? I certainly disagree with some of his rotation decisions sometimes, although he is playing Paul Reed more, which I think is the right move as the backup center. I disagree with some of his plays sometimes, But, like, is the group playing hard? Are they giving a decent amount of effort? And I think that question right now is unequivocally yes. So, you know, I certainly don't think the head coach is the biggest reason they're having this success, but I also didn't think it was the biggest reason they were struggling at the beginning of the season. And he certainly deserves some credit for kind of holding the fort here while all three of their best players have been hurt.
Well, Rich, thank you. This season has now gotten interesting. They're up to 12-9 on the season. They play the Cavs on the road tomorrow. So it'll be interesting to see how this plays out. And it'll be, let's see if by Christmas, hypothetically, they could have everybody back. So let's see how it looks from there.
Yeah, man. I mean, I think this road trip, a couple of tougher games. I think Embiid's injury was perfectly timed, right? You know, they got the Charlottes and the Orlandos. Those were impressive wins. Like, when you are minus your top three players, I don't care who you're playing. If you're beating teams by 30 points on the road, that's pretty good. Like, that's not something to just gloss over and say, oh, that was easy. But now that they have Embiid back for, you know, Cleveland, Memphis, these are tougher games. And I think they, you know, we'll start to see a little bit of what Shake Milton and D'Anthony Melton are capable of against these better teams.
Yeah, looking forward to it. Thanks so much, Rich. We'll talk soon.
See you, man.
All right. That was Rich Hoffman on the Comcast Business Hotline. Covers the Sixers for The Athletic. The sports world's all twisted around. 97.5 Fanatic, NBC Sports Philadelphia. Best show ever, 610-632-0975. Before we get to Jeff Mosher from Inside the Birds, let's get our final Twitter poll numbers with Jen Scordo.
All right, do we... That's the second time this week I've done that, isn't it? Uh-oh. Thank you. Do we underestimate Joel Embiid in this city? Final vote, 53% say yes, which means 47% say no.
I just don't get it. I don't understand that, because every time he plays poorly, everyone is talking about it. When he does things like last night where he scores the team's last 11 points and makes the best defensive play of the game, it's crickets. He's the only star in this city where that exists.
Yeah, and I even thought he had a pretty impressive closing to the first half as well, them into about 5-point range.
Yeah,
so,
he did.
So, I mean, at the end of the first half, at the end of the game, my man is winning you the basketball game, and no one really even seems to give him that credit. I don't know. It is strange.
I give him credit.
You do.
That's right. Somebody's
a beast, man.
Yeah. Yes, 97.5, the Fanatics Holiday Wheel is back. This year, we'll be spinning the Holiday Wheel three times a day with the John Kincaid Show at 8 a.m., Anthony Gargano at noon, and the best show ever at 4. You'll have a chance to win some amazing prizes. Register now at 97.5thefanatic.com. Starting Monday, December 12th, we will start calling names. The Fanatic Holiday Wheel is presented by Rally House. Every wheel spinner will automatically receive a $50 Rally House gift card. Rally House, your city, your house, Rally House. Register for the Holiday Wheel right now. Now, Jeff, before we get into the football, mm-hmm. we'll get to in just a moment. I want to ask you, our question of the day is, and you can answer that at 610-771-9705. What's the question, Jen, again, please?
What is the most serious injury that you've ever had that you can now laugh about?
Yeah, like if you lost an arm and you got a new one, you don't have to share. But what's the worst injury you had?
Well, I still have it. From playing sports, is that what you, or just
period?
Well, I still have it. It's from playing basketball against my best friend, who is significantly better than me, more talented, better athlete, and can jump a lot higher. We're playing one-on-one, and I tried to take him to the basket, and I got a step on him, but he closed quickly, and then I tried to lay it up, and he just blocked the ball so hard back into my face that he broke my nose.
Wow.
Which I can prove to you today, because I can do some weird stuff.
Nah, I can't watch. I won't.
See, this is the part where people are like, oh, I believe it. I can move the bridge of my nose left and right.
That moved a lot.
Like that.
Oh, my goodness.
Oh, I'm glad I can't see
it. Oh, my God. Thing's going every which way.
Here's the thing. I didn't realize he broke it until, you know, you can break things and not realize. I didn't realize it was broken, bro. I just thought it was like, I'm an idiot. I got the ball blocked into my face. Blood coming out of my nose.
Yeah.
But days later, I'm like, moving my nose around. I'm like, I don't think that's natural.
No.
that's probably a real thought there. You're probably onto something.
So I'm still living with it to this day. Never got it fixed. I'm like, you know, Michael Strahan. I'm just going to let it go. Like his teeth.
Yes.
Well, he got his teeth fixed.
For the long time.
Wait, what?
Yeah, he's got fake ones now.
He got that TV money. Yeah, he's good.
All right, man, I didn't even know that.
But you can answer that at 610-771-9705. Now, Jeff, before we get into the game, C.J. Gardner-Johnson, lacerated kidney. Now, I know you're you've been covering football for a really long time, the sportsman, and I was talking about how the danger of the game, as I've gotten older, it bothers me when stuff like this can happen. When an ankle happens, I understand. A quarterback hits his thumb on a helmet, breaks his thumb, okay, fine. This kind of thing it's a little off-putting for me, because I also know how poor overall the NFL has done with taking care of players after they're done playing, just in general. Mm-hmm. As a guy who covers the team as closely as you do, how does the injury factor hit you as you have to cover the team and be objective and all that stuff, but you recognize they're also humans at the same time?
Yeah, man, I think even before that, because some guys you get to know and you know what they go through or what their fear of. I mean, I think you guys have done a good job today of really explaining, especially you, Hunter. And by the way, that was the first thing I heard today when I got in the car. I turn on the radio and I just hear Hunter going, "You're a psycho! You're sick!" So naturally, I thought he was talking to Ricky, but then I realized it was a caller. But
that was good.
I've talked to a lot of guys, and it made me think about Tiki Barber, right? Because you guys were talking about guys earlier, but who sort of see the writing on the wall before it's there.
Right.
Tiki Barber announced his retirement before 2006, and I'm retiring after this year.
I remember that,
He was coming off a year where he had 1,800 rushing yards and about 2,300 total yards. He's the best overall weapon in the game.
Right.
And I remember we were having a conversation with him before a Giants-Eagles game, the Eagles reporters, and he said, and this is a very Tiki Barber way to look at it, as cerebral as he is, he said he believed that running backs, especially, had a finite number of hits within them before their body will drop so fast and be in decline to the point where they will not be able to, he said, I don't want to not be able to walk around with my kids, play sports with my kids, and it's easy to say that when you're 35, 36, he was 31 in his prime, and he said, I am done. And then he went and he had another 2,000-yard total season. He was still one of the top players in the game in 2006, and he said, I'm done because I know, I've seen, and knowing him, he did the calculations on how many tackles per year he was getting and compared that. And, you know, we all grew up in eras where we saw, like, Earl Campbell in a wheelchair. Utley. From the Lions, who was paralyzed.
Right.
The Jets got Dennis Byrd.
Yeah.
Those are the moments where you almost forget about it, but then you'll see them on national TV. And I happen to know Adam Talley.
Yeah, me too. Yeah.
Great guy.
Yeah, played against them in high school. Yeah.
Remember exactly when it happened, you know, against Ohio State.
Mm-hmm.
Eric LeGrand, Rutgers.
Right.
Same thing. I think those are the moments that remind us what you're saying, that this is a sport of tremendous athletes, and yes, they're well-paid, college kids, not, or at least not at that time, but you're all human, and nobody wants to be in a wheelchair for the rest of their life, no matter how much money they make. There is a sacrifice that is being made to play sports, and yes, and as Ricky knows, I mean, you can make great money or good money, but I bet you if you told somebody, all right, you're going to be a star athlete for 5 to 7 years, but unknowingly, you're going to be in a wheelchair after that. Do you still make that trade-off? I don't know if everybody makes that trade-off.
Right, and it's funny. You're a parent, obviously, and Ricky, your daughter. Now, how old is your oldest?
22.
Right, so she's the same age as a bunch of players coming into the league right now.
Right.
And I'm sure she's a bright young lady. But is she necessarily thinking about her 40s, 50s, and 60s right now?
No, absolutely not, no.
You know what and people are saying, oh, well, you know, they know what they're getting into. You remember when you were 20, I know you're a parent as well, and I know your kids aren't quite that old yet, but when they're 22, they're not going to have it all figured out.
No,
and
not at all.
They're not going to have it all figured out, and they're making, in this particular case, unknowingly in a way, I would even say unknowingly even now, long-term decisions right now, and not even realizing that these are actually long-term. Like Jordan Mailata is still a young guy in his 20s right now. Comes over to football and didn't know about football, didn't know how to put a helmet on, blah, blah, blah. Now he's making money. God bless him. He's got his contract. But he's probably not even fully aware, just because he hasn't been around it, of playing left tackle is not fun when you're 50. having played left tackle, like
right.
getting up from a chair at his size and all that kind of stuff. That's part of that deal.
Have a conversation, as I've had many, right, yeah. with Zach Ertz, who I can't remember what year it was. I think it was either third or fourth year of his career, right in, at the end of training camp. He suffered, was it a lung injury, a fractured rib, I think,
yeah.
that was, he was told, this close to hitting his heart area and causing, if not a terminal injury, a life-threatening type injury. I mean, right. that
well,
close.
We were bringing up the Chris Sims thing, where he played with a spleen.
Spleen.
The doctor right. said no.
And he played during
the
game.
He said yes, and Gruden, who was the coach at the time, went with the player. The player's always going to say yes. I think today that wouldn't happen, but that was probably foreshadowing right. of the Gruden mentality going forward.
Didn't Miles Sanders have when he was with Cleveland, Miles Austin.
Yes.
He had a very severe injury just yes. like that as well. It was yes. either a lacerated spleen or kidney or something like that that was, it put him out for a long time, and I'm sure right. he had the same kind of thoughts about it.
The best show ever on 97.5 The Fanatic.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.
97.5 The Fanatic.
The sports world's all twisted around. 97.5 Fanatic, NBC Sports Philadelphia. Best show ever, 610-632-0975. Before we get to Jeff Mosher from Inside the Birds, let's get our final Twitter poll numbers with Jen Scordo.
All right, Dewey. That's the second time this week I've done that, isn't it? Thank you. Do we underestimate Joel Embiid in this city? Final vote, 53% say yes, which means 47% say no.
I don't get it. I don't understand that, because every time he plays poorly, everyone is talking about it. When he does things like last night where he scores the team's last 11 points and makes the best defensive play of the game, it's crickets. He's the only star in this city where that exists.
Yeah, and I even thought he had a pretty impressive closing to the first half as well them into about 5-point range.
Yeah,
so.
He did.
So, I mean, he did, at the end of the first half, at the end of the game, my man is winning you the basketball game, and no one really even seems to give him that credit. I don't know. It is strange.
I give him credit.
You do.
That's right. Somebody
took the beast, man.
Yeah. Yes, 97.5, the Fanatics Holiday Wheel is back. This year, we'll be spinning the Holiday Wheel three times a day with the John Kincaid Show at 8 a.m., Anthony Gargano at noon, and the best show ever at 4. You'll have a chance to win some amazing prizes. Register now at 975thefanatic.com. Starting Monday, December 12th, we will start calling names. The Fanatic Holiday Wheel is presented by Rally House. Every wheel spinner will automatically receive a $50 Rally House gift card. Rally House, your city, your house, Rally House. Register for the Holiday Wheel right now. Now, Jeff, before we get into the football,
mm-hmm.
we'll get to in just a moment. I wanted to ask you, our question of the day is, and you can answer that at 610-771-9705. What's the question, Jen, again, please?
What is the most serious injury that you've ever had that you can now laugh about?
Yeah, like if you lost an arm and you got a new one, you don't have to share. But what's the worst injury you had?
Well, I still have it. From playing sports, is that what you, or just
period.
Well, I still have it. It's from playing basketball against my best friend who is significantly better than me, more talented, better athlete, and can jump a lot higher. We're playing one-on-one, and I tried to take him to the basket, and I got a step on him, but he closed quickly, and then I tried to lay it up, and he just blocked the ball so hard back into my face that he broke my nose.
Wow.
Which I can prove to you today, because I can do some weird stuff.
Nah, I can't watch.
See, this is the part where people are like, oh, I believe it. I can move the bridge of my nose left
and
right.
That moved a lot.
Like that.
Oh, my goodness.
Oh, I'm glad I can't see
it. Oh, my God. It's thing's going every which way.
Here's the thing. I didn't realize he broke it until, you can break things and not realize. I didn't realize it was broken, bro. I just thought it was like, I'm an idiot. I got the ball blocked into my face.
Yeah.
Blood coming out of my nose.
Yeah.
But days later, I'm like, moving my nose around. I'm like, I don't think that that's natural.
No.
that's probably a real thought there. You're probably onto something.
So I'm still living with it to this day. Never got it fixed. I'm like, you know, Michael Strahan. I'm just going to let it go. Like his teeth.
Yes.
Well, he got his teeth fixed.
For a long time.
Wait, what?
Yeah, he's got fake ones now.
He got that TV money. Yeah. He's good.
All right, man, I didn't even know that.
But you can answer that at 610-771-9705. Now, Jeff, before we get into the game, C.J. Gardner-Johnson, lacerated kidney. Now, I know you've been covering football for a really long time, the sportsman, and I was talking about how the danger of the game as I've gotten older, it bothers me when stuff like this can happen. When an ankle happens, I understand. A guy, a quarterback hits his thumb on a helmet, breaks his thumb, okay, fine. This kind of thing just, it's a little off-putting for me. Because I also know how poor overall the NFL has done with taking care of players after they're done playing, just in general. Mm-hmm. As a guy who covers the team as closely as you do, how does the injury factor hit you as you have to cover the team and be objective and all that stuff, but you recognize they're also humans at the same time?
Yeah, man, I think even before that, because some guys you get to know and you know what they go through or what their fear of. I mean, I think you guys have done a good job today of really explaining, especially you, Hunter. And by the way, that was the first thing I heard today when I got in the car. I turn on the radio and I just hear Hunter going, "You're a psycho! You're sick!" So naturally, I thought he was talking to Ricky, but then I realized it was a caller. But
that was good.
I've talked to a lot of guys, and it made me think about Tiki Barber, right? Because you guys are talking about guys earlier, but who sort of see the writing on the wall before it's there.
Right.
Tiki Barber announced his retirement before 2006, and I'm retiring after this year. He was coming off a year where he had 1,800 rushing yards and about 2,300 total yards. He's the best overall weapon in the game.
Right.
And I remember we were having a conversation with him before a Giants-Eagles game, the Eagles reporters, and he said, and this is a very Tiki Barber way to look at it, as cerebral as he is, he said he believed that running backs, especially, had a finite number of hits within them before their body will drop so fast and be in decline to the point where they will not be able to, he said, I don't want to not be able to walk around with my kids, play sports with my kids, and it's easy to say that when you're 35, 36, he was 31 in his prime, and he said, I am done. And then he went and he had another 2,000-yard total season. He was still one of the top players in the game in 2006, and he said, I'm done because I know, I've seen, and knowing him, he did the calculations on how many tackles per year he was getting and compared that. And, you know, we all grew up in eras where we saw, like, Earl Campbell in a wheelchair. Utley. From the Lions, who was paralyzed.
Right.
The Jets got Dennis Byrd.
Yeah.
Those are the moments where you almost forget about it, but then you'll see them on national TV. And I happen to know Adam Taliaferro.
Yeah, me too. Yeah.
Great guy.
Yeah, played against them in high school, yeah.
Remember exactly when it happened, you know, against Ohio State.
Mm-hmm.
Eric LeGrand, Rutgers.
Right.
Same thing. I think those are the moments that remind us what you're saying, that this is a sport of tremendous athletes, and yes, they're well paid, college kids, not, or at least not at that time, but you're all human, and nobody wants to be in a wheelchair for the rest of their life, no matter how much money they make. There is a sacrifice that is being made to play sports, and yes, and as Ricky knows, I mean, you can make great money or good money, but I bet you if you told somebody, all right, you're going to be a star athlete for 5 to 7 years, but unknowingly, you're going to be in a wheelchair after that. Do you still make that trade-off? I don't know if everybody makes that trade-off.
Right. And it's funny. You're a parent, obviously. And Ricky, your daughter. Now, how old is your oldest?
22.
Right. So she's the same age as a bunch of players coming into the league right now.
Right.
And I'm sure she's a bright young lady. But is she necessarily thinking about her 40s, 50s, and 60s right now?
No, absolutely not. No.
You know what I mean? And people are saying, oh, well, you know, they know what they're getting into. You remember when you were 20, I know you're a parent as well, and I know your kids aren't quite that old yet, but when they're 22, they're not going to have it all figured out.
No,
and
not at all.
They're not going to have it all figured out, and they're making, in this particular case, unknowingly in a way, I'll even say unknowingly even now, long-term decisions right now and not even realizing that these are actually long-term. Like Jordan Mailata is still a young guy in his 20s right now. Comes over to football and didn't know about football, didn't know how to put a helmet on, blah, blah, blah. Now he's making money. God bless him. He's got his contract. But he's probably not even fully aware, just because he hasn't been around it, of playing left tackle is not fun when you're 50, having played left tackle, like right. getting up from a chair at his hey. Size and all that kind of stuff. That's part of that deal.
Have a conversation, as I've had many, right, yeah. with Zach Ertz, who I can't remember what year it was. I think it was either third or fourth year of his career, right in, at the end of training camp. He suffered, was it a lung injury, a fractured rib, I think,
yeah.
that was, he was told, this close to hitting his heart area and causing, if not a terminal injury, a life-threatening type injury. I mean, right. that
well,
close.
We were bringing up the Chris Sims thing, where he played with a,
spleen.
The doctor said no.
And he played during the game.
He said yes, and Gruden, who was the coach at the time, went with the player. The player's always going to say yes. I think today that wouldn't happen, but that was probably foreshadowing right. of the Gruden mentality going forward.
Didn't Miles Sanders have a, when he was with Cleveland, Miles Austin.
Yes.
He had a very severe injury just yes. like that as well. It was yes. either a lacerated spleen or kidney or something like that that was, it put him out for a long time, and I'm sure right. he had the same kind of thoughts about it.
Yeah, and we're bringing that up because of Gardner Johnson with that. Now, on the football side of it, mm-hmm. We saw Blankenship. He's not going to play this week. They're quibbling about IR, and they don't tell us anyway. Mm-hmm. Football-wise, how big a loss is that for the next few weeks?
It is a big loss. I mean, obviously, he was leading the NFL in interceptions. It's probably more of a loss in the pass defense than it is in run defense,
right.
as we know.
Right.
But honestly, safeties aren't supposed to be the ones who are your best run defenders anyway. So right. the issues there don't extend to the secondary, but they stand out when he's trying to make an arm tackle and not, right. not successful at it. There's really nothing they can do, right? He's going to be out a couple weeks. We'll see. As we understand it, it's not just the lacerated.
It's also a rib,
right? There's some rib area, and it's sort of nebulous right now. I know they're always circumspect anyway, but I think it's also they don't exactly know whether okay. it's going to be two or three or longer than that. Mm-hmm. So they're getting information on it. I've heard also let's you know, go out and sign Malcolm Jenkins or this or that. Listen, they've got safeties. It's not an ideal situation. You have Blankenship, you have Wallace, you have Sasha,
who did play some last year. It's not right. like he's completely, you know.
And remember this, when Avante Maddox comes back, which I would imagine would be, I think he's got one more game to miss.
And apparently he's on schedule. That's what
correct.
I heard.
I believe he is more on schedule than anybody else so far. If he comes back, then Josiah Scott, who's been playing pretty all right, I mean, he's holding it down as the nickel back, he can go and play where Gardner Johnson was playing because that was him before they traded for Gardner Johnson. Right. They had already started cross-training him there. None right. of this is ideal,
right.
but this is what NFL teams have to deal with on a regular basis.
Yeah. Right.
The Eagles did a great job, and I'm sure that they attribute it to their medical staff and the way they practice in training camp of staying healthy
yes.
for the first 6 or 7 weeks. But as we all know here, this stuff catches up with you. You're
yes.
going to have your injuries no matter what you do throughout the course of a year, and it's hitting them now.
I'm yeah. literally knocking on wood. It's so far, none of them have been season-ending. So far.
Well, the Tui Pelotu was, but again, that's not
that's
the
adept,
guy that you're...
Yeah, that's an adept guy. And also...
Barnett earlier in the year.
I guess I'm not counting him because I feel like they've done a nice job replacing him, but that's just...
Yeah, they definitely did. Mosh, what's the update on Jordan Davis? Is he an automatic as soon as the timeline is ready for him to rock?
So this is a really good question because it's hard to... As far as I understood it, for the first few weeks of the rehab, he was getting to his benchmarks. They were seeing what they wanted to see. But the other feedback I was getting is just because you're getting from A to B to C on this roadmap, I kept being told, remember, he is a very large man to be having a high ankle sprain.
Right.
And just getting through like, okay, you can do this on a treadmill or you can do this when you're non-weight bearing. It doesn't mean you're ready to go out and even start practicing. So I'm very curious to see. Tomorrow is Wednesday, right?
Yes, that's
the first day where they reconvene. They have not yet announced that he has been activated in to the 21-day window.
No.
Even if he is, I'm not 100% certain that he'll be able to go out there against the Titans. I just think we need a little bit more information about what he can and can't do on the practice field. But I always found it interesting that I was getting sort of the check marks are being met, but beware that it doesn't mean he'll just snap his fingers and be ready to go.
Because they showed him accidentally on daily on Postgame Live running into the tunnel,
yeah.
running into the locker room, like jogging into it. So he was able to do that.
Yeah.
So it was like, oh, that yeah, they showed it when Barrett was doing his rant after the game. They cut to the and everybody's going in, and he's jogging into the locker room. I was like, well, that's good. 350-pound
man. Sign. Very
3 weeks
good
later,
sign.
Jogging. That was a good sign.
Oh, yeah. Certainly a better sign than if he was not evident or if you saw him limping or something.
Although they're still pretty safe with Sue and Joseph there anyways.
Well, Safe is a good,
Safe
in that they have a body to do what they need to do. Now, Joseph was not nearly as effective on Sunday against the Packers as he was the day before. You actually saw him get stood up and moved around.
Yeah,
which I think is actually kind of normal for a guy who is. I thought the week before was like he exceeded expectations, and that probably was a little bit much. But they're gonna have to figure this thing out.
Yeah, and
special teams.
Yeah, that's what. Yeah, so
kickoff return. What's
so
going on?
While the defense is the defense, they kept having to deal with short fields. You had the Brown fumble, but then special teams over and over again. Where if they have to start those drives at the 25, I feel a lot better about the defense's performance. But they're starting at the 45, at the 50, et cetera, and it's been something every week. It's either been missed kicks, blocked punts, going for punt, fake punts.
Fake punts. It's
something every week, and when it's that many different things, and when the team clearly is talented, that tells me that there's at least some talented players on your special teams. That points to me to the coach.
Well, I think it's a couple of things. I'm sure coaching, because to your point, it's not just one thing. It's the whole, as Jason Kelly, it's the whole darn special teams unit. So that's fair.
Yeah.
And this staff doesn't play as many starters on its special teams as, say, Doug did when Malcolm Jenkins was on the special teams, and some of the other starters were of prominent would be on special teams.
Right.
And it's sort of...
Yeah, Malcolm wouldn't miss a snap.
No, he would not miss a snap.
Played everything.
I mean, I took from Nick Sirianni's press conference in the whole, we're going to look under every rock, like, we're going to explore some things that we need to know to get changed, as maybe that they will shift that thinking. But do remember, though, you're now playing your third safety, right? And you're down your slot corner. Right. You're down some guys who could help you there. So you don't want Reed Blankenship playing on special teams and then also having to go and play every single snap on defense either. So they're not in a great position there. But I think the bigger point is, because I've heard people say, hey, look, you're 10-1, right? It's every team's got a weakness. That's fair. But if you go throughout the course of playoff history, think of every great team that didn't win because they got let down on special teams. Think about the team the Eagles just beat. The Packers have at least three big-time playoff losses, not because of Aaron Rodgers not coming up big, not because of their defense, because their special teams failed them. The Giants against San Francisco, the Trey Junkin year, or the year that the guy from San Francisco botched the punt, and the Giants went to the championship game in the Super Bowl. Steve Norwood, wide right. I mean, Scott Norwood. There are so many big games in the playoffs decided on special teams that they really do need to figure out how to make it better. Because if that's the one thing that gets them lost in the playoffs, man, this city will have this will not be a fun place to be if special teams lose them a playoff game.
You'll be able to get all this inside and more up next on Inside the Birds with Adam Kaplan. The other part, just imagine a scenario, and this is my fear as we go to the question of the day. You get to the NFC Championship game, San Francisco comes to your building, and you lose because of that.
Yeah.
Like, I think it was bad with the Phillies. Like, I don't know if I'll ever recover.
Jimmy Garoppolo starts at the Eagles 36.
Hurts is doing his thing and all this stuff, and that's why you lose?
Yeah, the one game that sticks out to me, I went to about Green Bay. You remember, they were beating Seattle in 2014, I think by 11,
I remember.
Seattle scores.
Yes.
There's very little time left. Seattle has an onside kick, and a third-string tight end cannot come up with it.
Yep.
Seattle gets the ball back and wins. Right? And then they go to the Super Bowl and lose to the Patriots.
They should have,
Right.
But
like you're Aaron Rodgers. You're the Packers, and you're like, oh, my God. How do we lose that way?
And that's what that needs to get fixed over the next few weeks. Thanks so much, Jeff. It is now time for our question of the day.
This is the question of the day. Let's go to the answering machine.
Yes, 610-771-9705 is the number for future reference. Let's see what we have today, Jeff.
I was playing a Sunday beer league soccer, went to run, completely tore my Achilles, 6 months non-weight bearing. Just got a dog, too, so that was great. Thanks, everybody.
That happened to Anthony playing hoops.
Thanks, everybody.
You should ask to see his scar.
Ew, no.
Rolled up on him completely playing hoops.
Ooh.
Pickup game. Anthony rolled up on him.
Happened to a friend of mine.
Into a knot. They had to untie it and then connect, unroll it.
Yeah, rolls into a ball.
Yep, rolled into a ball in the back of his leg. Happened to Anthony Gargano. Yep.
Only if he lets me show my nose.
No, there you go.
In high school basketball, I suffered a compound fracture where my shin bone actually was sticking through my skin. That's why I love golf.
I thought we had said that you could joke about.
Yeah.
It would take down some of the severity. That was, we discussed this before the program. It did not take down the severity of the injuries, did it?
No.
It's almost 20 years ago, playing pickup Thanksgiving football. Me trying to be the hero, go for the interception. My face smashes into the back of the receiver's head. And I'm concussed. I'm disoriented. And I thought that was the worst of it, but my face just kept pounding and pounding even more as the week went by. Turns out I broke my orbital bone.
Oh, my goodness.
On Thanksgiving Day?
Happy Thanksgiving.
Just a little game of pickup on Thanksgiving.
It happened to Marissa from MMR, from the Preston and Steve Show.
Yeah.
Also a broken orbital bone. And her boyfriend used to ride in the X Games on a bicycle. He had a collision with a guy. He looks at his leg thinking it's okay.
Oh, God.
He looks at his face. Broken jaw. Didn't even realize it.
Whose idea was this? I think Jen came up with this question.
On Twitter, real fast, Sarah McLachlan was riding a horse, and a horse threw her into a bunch of tree stumps, and then they had to cover her body in ice packs that were made for the horses, so they were really big.
Oh, my goodness.
She said she was okay, though.
Thank God.
Thanks to Booty. Thanks to Dylan. Up next on the radio, obviously, Inside the Birds, followed by Flyers pregame. And on TV, Birds Huddle and Fantasy Football Happy Hour. The Flyers are on ESPN+, and we'll talk to everybody tomorrow.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.